Hello, America. Dave Hodges here. I am the host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. We are brought to you by the product that you should be giving this holiday season. Give the gift of life. This is the gift that gave me my life back. Thank you, Scotty Sachs, very, very much. This is the Nanosoma liquid spray, five sprays once a day, maintenance dose. You can use it as often as you want because it's all natural. And it brought me back from strep lung linings and resulting from RSV. And I was told they're not coming back, Dave. Prepare for the worst. And that's basically what I was told by the experts. Well, it's not just this that gets treated. This doesn't cure anything. But it raises your immune system to unbelievable levels. It's fantastic, it's wonderful, and it works. And then there's the starter pack. Help for the joints, help for the wrinkles, the cuts, and the burns. You can get it all with the starter pack. Go to, and by the way, you get 15% off. You can get all this by going to iwantmyhealthback.com/Dave Hodges. iwantmyhealthback.com/Dave Hodges. Very, very interesting, isn't it? Very interesting. Candace Owens came out with a recording of Mitch, and Mitch said, "Hey, I'm there." And Candace starts sending pictures of various lookalikes, and Mitch picked out everyone correctly, including a congressman, which I don't care about. But I do care about Erica Kirk and Brian Harpole, who were allegedly at this meeting identified by Mitch by random photos given to him by Candace. Says, yep, that's the guy. Nope, that's not her. That's not her. That's Erica. Why would they be at one of the most secure facilities in the country? CIA, NSA operatives under the protection of the U.S. Army. Why? It makes no sense that they would be there. Oh, Candace, this guy's making all this up. This is garbage. And every time these people attack Candace, she produces the receipts. And on that note, we're going to produce a receipt. This is a copy of base military police form narrative that was initiated on 9 September 2025 at approximately 1100 hours at the Fort Huachuca Military Police Station. Okay, and this is where Mitch showed up. Mitch Snow, saying he used to work in a joint task force in the 80s and blah, 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 blah. And he's really concerned. And they were thinking, well, what's in your backpack? Could it be a bomb? And so they got the bomb sniffing dogs and all that. That stuff's irrelevant. Mitch, in my humble opinion, created an issue that he knew would lead to an investigation because he needed to validate what he knew or suspected and knew what was true. Do you understand what it means if Erica Kirk and the head of Charlie's security, as well as Erica's ex-boyfriend, if they were at Fort Huachuca, do you understand what that means? When I reported this before, based on what Candace said, I said, hey, I'm going to need some additional proof. A second witness, someone else coming forward, validating the same story. Well, we don't have a second witness. We just have a form that makes it official that Mitch was there. That places him in the position, and as Candace has said, I rapid-fired pictures to him, and he picked out, quote, the right people. This is so disturbing. This is so monumental. I've said all along that I thought Charlie was the victim of an intel operation. I'll leave it to you to decide, is this enough proof? Is this enough proof? I don't know. For me, I have a really good idea about what happened, who did it, who planned it, how it happened. I'm seeing crowd shots now that I can't deny. Candace produced the black plastic microphone shattered pieces in the back seat of the SUV that took Charlie to the hospital. We're seeing some really suspicious things right now on X on film from personnel. I think TPUSA personnel that concerns me greatly. No wonder that organization is in extreme meltdown. Ben Shapiro, don't ask questions. We know the truth. Deplatform those who say anything other than what we tell you is the truth. It's effectively what he said. This is really scary stuff. This truly is. You know, when Jim Garrison, who was a district attorney in the 1960s, was minding his own business, just doing his job, prosecuting criminals as every DA does. And this Kennedy situation landed in his lap. He got this evidence, he got that evidence, he got it just fell into it. And it was like, oh, what have I stepped into? It's kind of like how I feel here. This is way bigger. And then we get into Candace's background, which I may not look at this in this particular series of segments. I might need more time to process. But I am really, really concerned about what I'm finding there. And we had a video. Let's just put it this way. You're not allowed to see it unless you go to alternative sites. Scary. It's scary how far this goes. I think we need to take a look back about IP addresses and who was looking at this situation before it ever happened and from where they were looking. This is really bad, people. This is so bad. I'm so depressed. TPUSA was the pillar of American exceptionalism in championing free speech and promoting Christian values in combination with our Constitution. When they say turning point and they have the little arrow symbol, let's stretch that turning point arrow another 90 degrees because it should be called turned around point. You don't represent what Charlie did. And I can see why it makes sense that Charlie just couldn't be voted out by the board. It's beginning to make a lot of sense now, and it should make sense to you too. This is so disturbing. I honestly. I can only imagine how Candace feels, because I know how I feel falling into connecting these dots. IP addresses, which stay tuned, we'll get to that. Plastic in the back seat of the SUV. The strange photos we're seeing that I'm still processing, but of people up close and personal to Charlie. Very, very strange things I'm seeing. This is scary. This is frightening to know how far this stretches. This isn't just about donor greed. It's not just about the will of a foreign leader. This is much bigger to all of us. Because an organization can be pure and honest, but it can be twisted in ways that are very malevolent and very, shall we say, dangerous to the people. Someone's going to look at this and say, Dave, you look like you just saw a ghost. I did. I did. This Fort Huachuca thing, my confidence call on this now is probably about 90%. And if it's true in the form it's being presented, this changes everything from the top of our government through Christian churches that are being infiltrated, and we know that's true, to what happened to Charlie, to what's happened to the premier young adult influencing agent in America. We have indeed reached a turning point. I'm Dave Hodges. Tell me what you think. Have you had your aha moment? I told you after week one went by, and I wasn't into the Charlie, there's more to this than meets the eye. I had to do it because if I had any integrity, I couldn't ignore all the crap I was seeing. Remember, I started off saying I didn't want anything to do with the conspiracy here. Let's just back TPUSA, continue the mission. It's really important, and I'll grieve Charlie on my own. I said that a few times that week, and I couldn't ignore what I found. And now I said, well, recently I said, we're not stopping until we get to the bottom of it. The bottom is in sight, and it's much scarier than I ever thought I would find. It's on a level. When I look at the JFK assassination, Charlie was not the president, but the spin-off events and the factors related to this and the potential for monumental change, not to our betterment. It's as impactful as November of 1963. And I'm still processing it. You have it right there. You can do the screenshot. You can go research it and look it up. Candace is on vacation for a while. I've heard from a mutual contact that she's coming out with more. But the person said, I'm not allowed to say, Dave, but you'll want to pay attention. Ordinarily, I reject things like that, but I think it's probably true. There's going to be a major revelation in January. Major. God keep Candace Owens safe. God keep me safe. Because we are in very, very murky waters. I'm Dave Hodges. This is the Common Sense Show. Hello, America. Dave Hodges here. I am the host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time. We always ask that you help us with this because we believe we're producing content that's fairly universally applicable. And we're looking at providing content that helps people put things in perspective and allows them to make more productive decisions going forward. And we don't tell you if our way to think is your way to think, but we want you to be stimulated in your thinking by what we produce. And there is an element here that I've really wrestled with, and I'm going to share some inner struggle I've had with this. In case you don't know, I am a trained therapist, inactive now and have been for quite some time. But I used to work with people that had issues ranging from addictions to various forms of mental illness. And as such, with my background in psychology and also having taught it for numerous decades, everything from high school to college to postgraduate, I'm fairly familiar with certain patterns, particularly as it relates to grief. And I have always made it my conscious decision not to be judgmental about how people display grief, because it can be quite unique. But there are basic patterns we do fit into, even though the patterns can shift and alter and we revisit, they can come in any order. But there's things I've seen with Erica Kirk repeatedly that just tremendously bother me. And I have to tell you, I first said when Charlie died, first of all, I was in shock. I couldn't believe it happened. And I'm still going through my own mourning process because I admired him so much, even though I didn't know him personally. We crossed paths a couple of times, but I admired him as a person and as an activist. And I thought, knowing that we all have our human frailties, I thought he had his perspectives in the right place. God, family, country. And of course, other values like responsibility we have from one person to another. And when I was told by a young person, a teenager, "Did you hear Charlie was shot?" What? I couldn't believe it. And that was my denial. I could not, no. No, he's got to survive. That was my first reaction. Today, I have to admit to you that I struggle with seeing his old tapes. And it's kind of like revisiting a lost love that you didn't want to end. And you're reminded by things, and you go, "That'll never happen again." And that sadness is pervasive. And that's how I feel about Charlie. I see the great work he did and how masterful he was teaching people tolerance and how to accept other people's viewpoints, but also how to debate without anger. And I know that we won't ever see that again. He was a generational talent. And I don't know that there is anybody that will ever take his place. I'm going to walk you through in this particular segment. I'm going to walk you through the expected stages of grief, but I'm also going to contrast that. There's five stages of grief, and I'm going to contrast that with the five stages of fake grief. Actually, there's four stages of fake grief, unless I subdivide one. And I'm greatly disturbed by what I see with Erica. And I just want to remind everybody, if you think I'm being harsh and insensitive and abandoning the canons of my former profession, I am not. The first thing I said for a week, I maintained this position. I won't go down this conspiracy trail. I was a little disturbed when Candace first asked questions. I thought, "Oh, Candace, come on, I really respect you, but really?" And I said, "We need to become 1 million Charlie Kirks. No one can take his place, but collectively we can move what he did forward." And I began thinking about how could we get more TPUSA chapters on various campuses with my connections. And I was actually thinking about that, sat down, drew up a plan. This is a very hard piece for me to do because I'm going to be criticizing the behaviors I've seen, and particularly with one major issue that I think is literally incomprehensible about grief. And I don't want to do this, but I feel I have to because I don't want people who are 18 to 24 to be deceived by an organization that no longer fits its original purpose. I'm going to create a mental image for you here very quickly. Imagine TPUSA headquarters with Charlie standing in front. Imagine TPUSA with the Israeli flag underneath of it with dollar signs. That's the then and the now. And I don't care how harsh it sounds, all the evidence points in this direction. We're going to take a quick break here because I wanted to tell you about something that we all need to be doing. Stress is a big debilitator of our being, and certainly when we talk about the loss of public figures. I'm going to back up. I was just a little kid when John Kennedy was killed, but I see pictures of him and I still have grief about what could have been and what work was in motion, and it all died with him. I still have that kind of latent grief. It's stressful. It's stressful to mourn over Charlie and the lost opportunity his great organization had put forward. Now, one way to deal with stress is to boost your immune system. And I'm going to show you something here very quickly with these products that I am totally all in with. And it's the Magic Dicol Starter Pack, particularly the first product. You get three of these in the starter pack at 15% off. The NanoSomal liquid sprays, it takes your immune system to unbelievable levels. Doesn't cure anything, but it sure as heck does help you fight off what's there. It's restorative and preventative. And then there's the gel you rub on your joints. It's not a take it on Monday and you're okay on Tuesday. It took me 6 to 8 weeks till I could start to do things in the gym I hadn't done in 25 years. Still doing them. And then, of course, the skin cream cuts burns and wrinkles together, 15% off. If I had my druthers, everybody in America would be on these products. I believe it would cut healthcare costs. I believe that people would be able to fight off the effects of stress, like what we're talking about here. I believe that people would generally just be healthier and enjoy life a lot more with a lot less pain. Sound like you? All you got to do is go to iwantmyhealthback.com/Dave Hodges. iwantmyhealthback.com/Dave Hodges. 5 stages of grief. They can come in any order, but typically and routinely they follow these patterns. One, you have denial, and that's what I had. Oh my gosh, when I was told by this young man, and he could see how visibly shaken I was, and he said, "I'm sorry if I upset you." I said, "You didn't upset me. The event upsets me, and I was in denial. Can't be, not Charlie, not at 31 years of age, not with him being a national figure on the way to greatness. I mean, he could have been a governor, a senator, a president. Anything was within his reach. He was your classic overachiever. He was the Pat Tillman of his profession. If you don't know who Pat Tillman was, NFL football player, died in Afghanistan, and he went there to fight because of 9/11. And we honor Pat in Arizona. We have Pat's Run, which is the largest 5K event in America. But it almost brings tears to my eyes to think about Pat Tillman. Denial. Denial. I remember when a colleague, friend of mine, fellow professor, told me, he says, "Did you know Pat Tillman died?" No. Same thing with Charlie. Denial. Denial. I didn't see this in Erica Kirk. I have never seen this in Erica Kirk. No denial. Number two is anger. Just over a week after Charlie's death, she forgives the killer, who I don't believe is the killer. And I have a problem with TPUSA not asking the right questions that many of us are asking, you know, from Mr. Lee to Mr. Dorr to Miss Owens. We're all asking the same questions, and they're founded in just, we want to know the truth. There's no agenda behind what we're doing. In fact, actually, there's a huge risk politically and possibly even physically for daring to ask these questions. And of course, you will draw the ire of one Ben Shapiro, another story for another time. But I didn't see the anger in here either. The bargaining. This is something that's more private, and I don't know that you see it overtly, maybe some words, but you just start thinking in your mind, if I'd have done things different, they'd still be here. And you can't take the clothes out of the closet. I saw this with my mom when my dad passed. She couldn't get rid of his clothes. And she was having a hard time moving on. It's typical. It's the bargaining. We keep the clothes, we keep him. I don't know if Erica did that or not. We wouldn't see that visibly. The depression. You can do reaction formation, which is a personality disorder. And to avoid grief, we put on the happy face to deal with it. And it's possibly, and listen, I use this as an excuse in my mind for Erica's seemingly inappropriate lack of emotional response to the passing of her husband. I said, well, it might be a defense mechanism, reaction formation. It can evolve into a personality disorder if it becomes obsessive. And I thought that we may be witnessing that. But you can't keep depression at bay doing this. It's not 100% foolproof strategy. The reality is this. I have never seen her depressed. 2 days after she is the Turning Point CEO and she's making appearances and she's joyful, engaging, charismatic. After 2 days, most people would be crushed, unable to function. Let me have the amazing Mikey McCoy take over for a while until I can function. Thank you. I'll assume the role. I think that's what Charlie would have wanted, but I just can't do it right now. I'm sorry, I didn't buy it. And then there's the acceptance. And 3 months in to the so-called grief period, I don't know that we'd have time to see this. But I think acceptance came on the second day following. There were some fake grief stages too that therapists are very well aware of. We have a disconnect between what should be your inner feelings and your outer expression. How do you display affective emotion? Rubbing the back of the head of the vice president is not a way. I was just horrified and shocked when I saw that. Secondly, you get the over-the-top cliches. I've seen a good deal of that from her. I would categorize them as, oh, well, it's sad, but we have to move on. That's the banner I would put over the behaviors I've seen that I could pick apart one by one. Then there's the lack of emotional depth. The memory she cites from their marriage, of being husband and wife and parents together, to me, lack extreme emotional depth. God forbid, knock on wood, right? If I lost my wife today, a lot of my thoughts would go immediately to our parenting, back to our courtship. Neither one of us, we were very independent. Neither one of us were necessarily looking to get married and meet the right person. But after a year and a half, we made the decision rather impulsively and we eloped to Lake Tahoe. But I had the memories and I would be expressing those and talking about those in detail. Erica Kirk couldn't remember her wedding date or Charlie's birthday. Can that happen at a time of high stress? Of course it can. It can happen to any of us. But at 36 years of age, would this be something that'd be expected? And she had more than one occurrence of memory lapses. I mean, I'll tell you this. First of all, we know that women have a better detail for memories than men, by far. When you pick up your clothes at the dry cleaner, women will see the spot more than the men will. Women remember the dates. They not only remember the date of their boyfriend in high school, they remember the mother's birthday. And I'm married to someone who shows me this almost every day. Oh yeah, I kind of didn't remember that date. Or yeah, I see it all the time. And you husbands out there are nodding your heads, yes. This is part of what I'm talking about here. And then what you really see, the hallmark characteristic of fake grief is seeking attention and personal gain from the grief. And some of it could be motivated by extreme insecurity, and this is the way that I feel better about myself by promoting myself into the grief so people notice me and, hey, poor old person. But that's not what we're seeing here. 2 days in, you're the CEO, Erica, and you start appearing on the podcast. And then I'm wondering who's watching your kids because now you're on a tour to sell Charlie's book, and that didn't go well. And Charlie was about modesty. And quite frankly, Erica, since his death, you have changed the way you dress. And it's become flamboyant. And your appearances, I mean, it's like Super Bowl halftime performances with the sparklers and everything else. It's attention-seeking behavior. And it happened at Amfest. I watched a few clips of it. it was really noticeable at Amfest. But I will tell you this. I'll tell you this. What really got me was there's a friend of mine who's an agent, and we're going to leave this person's name out of it for obvious reasons. I don't want to hurt them professionally. But they were so horrified by what they saw. And then I had a business meeting with someone who saw the same thing and was very, very concerned when that person was there. And they weren't there for Amfest, they were there for context. But there was a display. And if you haven't heard this, you might want to sit down. If you've heard this, you're just going to have to relive the regurgitation and disgust you had, the same as I had. This is the most cringe-worthy element of Erica Kirk, because there wasn't a display out there that the CEO wouldn't have had to approve of, or her designee. And if the designee had any questions, they'd have gone to the CEO and said, "Should we have a mock-up of the tent of which Charlie was attacked? And allow people at Amfest to come in and do selfies in this? This has to be the single most disgusting thing I have seen. And if you want to know what fake grief looks like, it's embodied right there. That didn't happen without Erica's tacit approval." I mean, if I had a loved one killed in a car accident and I was having an event and a memorial where I would eulogize them and remember them in some way, I sure as heck wouldn't tow in a damaged car and have people take selfies in front of the damaged car. This is incomprehensible. I think it speaks to depraved emotionality. There's a depraved indifference here that we're seeing, and this is undeniable. And I'm giving you not my personal reaction. My personal reaction is it makes me sick to my stomach. My professional reaction as a former therapist is the fact that I'm seeing extremely shallow levels of grief, if any. And so when we bundle all this up and we say there's really things that bother us about TPUSA, and in particular, Erica Kirk's leadership since her installation as CEO, we're concerned by a lot of things we're seeing. And we're really concerned more by what they haven't asked. In telling other people to shut up because we're asking questions that Erica and her inner circle should be asking, and we're going to revisit some of those today. This is why we're upset. We lost a national treasure. We've lost a national movement because what we saw at Amfest is not what Charlie Kirk would have wanted. Here's your case in point. Ben Holier Than Thou Shapiro gets up. And he says, if it's Charlie Kirk, who was all about First Amendment free speech and tolerance of people's free speech, including people like Nick Fuentes, who should be allowed to speak. And I don't disagree. Nick should be able to say what he wants to say. And we can sit back and say, boy, Nick, I ain't with you on that one, buddy. That was Charlie. Instead, the lead speaker for 20 minutes did nothing but call for deplatforming. It was for what was formerly a free speech institution. If you needed any proof that what is the TPUSA of today is not the TPUSA that Charlie created, I think we could stop right there with the mock-up assassination tent at the event with selfies. And I got to tell you something, too, people. I got to wonder about you. If you stepped in there and had a selfie taken, I think you need to look at your level of sensitivity. And I'm being very serious about that. I have no problem with you walking through and you get your picture taken next to a mock-up of Charlie Kirk. You're identifying with him. But when you do that, you're identifying with one of the most outrageous acts of physical and political violence in this country's history. And that disgusts me. And the fact that that was at Amfest told me everything I needed to know about TPUSA. When Candace called for the demand that people ask for their money back in donations, that they not give any more donations, they withdraw their support from the organization. This is the prima facie evidence that Candace has not gone off the deep end. She's responding as a sensitive, well-intentioned person would react who lost a dear friend. And she's in shock by what she's not seeing with appropriate levels of grief. And I'll be honest with you, when you take that entire inner circle, I see nothing there that shows the sincerity of grief from any of the inner circle that we've so discussed. We're going to hit that today too in a later segment. I'm Dave Hodges. This is a piece I did not want to do. I did not want to be here today talking to you about this. I would like to be able to say, and I just hope Erica can get through this, please pray for the kids, which we should still be doing. And I'll pray for Erica too, and you should too. But this is not where I wanted to be. I wanted to be in total support of what TPUSA was and how we can expand it and not let Charlie's death be in vain. And if his death becomes in vain, it's because of the insensitive actions by everyone at TPUSA. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you back here again next time.
I was done with my day's work. I mean, I've got Christmas Eve approaching, want to squeeze in a quick workout. And then, of course, got to get together family for Christmas Eve service. But I read something in my comment section and I felt compelled. I don't know if it was a message from God or what it was, but I felt compelled to come out and address this and address it fully and completely. The comment, actually, it was a question posed to me. And it was in response to the Fort Huachuca follow-up post that I did, an earlier segment. And the question said, where could Charlie have gone? I'm going to reveal a little bit more about what I know that I've held on to because I'm hoping I'll be joined by an army to add credibility. Because if you don't march forward in this topic right now with a pretty good base with you, not just the people that come and support you, but also your colleagues in the media, and I look at these people as colleagues unless they're working for the other side. And so I was hoping that. And it's not that I lack the courage. I mean, folks, come on, look, I was the first one to expose Benghazi, and I mean the first. And I was the first one in the Gulf oil crisis to jump on that immediately. The late Jim Mars gave me credit for that in his book he wrote. So I'm no stranger to stepping out and sticking my neck out. But in something like this, I wanted some consensus because it requires interpretation and dot connecting rather than first degree testimony. And we have good evidence, but I don't know that I say I have first degree testimony in a court of law if this were cross-examination. Could I nail it completely? Preponderance of the evidence, though, very well would convince a jury. I think it would convince me. It's convinced me already. So I was asked the question, where could Charlie have hidden? And in that question, there is more to it than that. And I mean a lot more to it. And then I'll give you a direct answer to that question. We're brought to you by the great NanoSoma spray. Listen, it's not just the spray, it's the gel, it's the whole nine yards. I love these products, the three liquid sprays you get with the starter pack. They build the immune system to unbelievable levels. And I've said it many times, and I'll keep saying it. I am here because of that product. I certainly wouldn't be behind the microphone. I wouldn't be preparing to go work out after I'm done with this broadcast. I would not be doing any of those things had it not been for this spray. It boosts the immune system. Secondly, the joints. I'm doing things in the gym I haven't done in over 25 years. And it's because this gel grows pluripotent stem cells. It works. And then, of course, you got the skin cream with the wrinkles, cuts, and burns. the three of the starter pack, 15% off. Everybody in America should be taking these three products. You'll be using them. Go to iwantmyhealthback.com/DaveHodges. iwantmyhealthback.com/DaveHodges. I got to tell you, I am really, really, really concerned about where this whole Charlie Kirk intrigue is going. I said about 2 weeks ago, this has led me into areas I never knew existed. I didn't understand the degree of control that the United States would allow a foreign power to have over its policies and its government officials. I knew there was influence. I didn't know there was this much influence. That's come out, and it's not something I predetermined going in. And that includes the nonsense that Biden's were doing with China that came out in the whole, how, excuse me, the House Oversight Committee with Comer, who did a great job bringing stuff out. Of course, no one ever goes to jail. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, question I was asked, where could Charlie have gone? This is something that I have not said directly, but the inferences have swirled around. I'm going to say it bluntly. It is my considered opinion, based on the evidence that I've seen, the evidence that I've been told about, that Charlie was betrayed mostly from within. The within betrayal could not have happened. Let's put it, let me back up. I want to rephrase this. The external pressure from the donors and other forces could not have been successful without the internal complicit participation of people on the inside at TPUSA. And I'm not saying everybody. I have called out the people who I have concerns about. And I don't feel the need to run through the whole thing right now, but I'll just give you a couple of examples. I'm standing 6 feet from my friend, and he goes down in a heap. And I start talking on my phone and walk away and don't even give him a second look. And then his body's being loaded into an SUV, and I keep on walking. That's an evidence. That's an evidence. I won't even ask my wife this question because it'd probably be too painful for her to answer. But if I ask my wife, and in fact, I may even do the experiment, what the heck? But I guarantee I know the answer already. If I met the same fate as Charlie, my wife would vacillate between extreme anger and reclusiveness. And that would go on for some time, weeks, months. And then there would be the moments of loneliness where the extreme sadness is expressed to close confidants and family members. I know the pattern. I know what she would do. I've been through her losing both of her parents and a sister. I know the grief pattern. And it's typical. What's happened here in Charlie's death is not typical. It's not typical from his widow. It's not typical from his inner circle. It's not typical. You know, I lost contact for a few years with my best friend from high school. We played basketball against each other in high school, against each other in college, played on all kinds of summer league teams. We partied together. We went to athletic events together. We were great friends. I was really good friends with his older brother, too. And I decided it's time to look him up. I want to wish him happy holidays. And all his family is gone. And then I found out he didn't answer my text. I go, that's just bizarre. No matter how mad he is at me, at least to have a sarcastic comment. So I did a search online because I called a mutual friend of ours. He goes, no, I haven't heard from him in a couple of years. He died last year. Now, this is someone who's not in my daily life anymore, hasn't been for a very long time. but it's not. I just have to tell you, the morning is there for something like this. And today, when I go out in the basketball court and shoot some hoops, he's going to be in my memory. Things that we did flash back. I will tell you, if it was my spouse, you wouldn't see a jovial face from me for a very long time, and I wouldn't be doing this. I would not be doing this. So you tell me, where could Charlie have gone? He ordered an audit because he knew things stunk with their finances. Why else would he order a Doge type audit? And then the audit gets canceled by the very people that I'm saying I believe betrayed him. It's beginning to come out how they betrayed him. And it's not Dave Hodges putting his name on this. I'm waiting for the evidence to mount, and then I'll connect the dots again and I'll tell you what I think. I don't want to speculate on something so personal and volatile. But he was betrayed. Just by the fact that there hasn't been an audit in the 3 months since his death that he ordered. That means he suspected TPUSA was an illegitimate operation and nothing has changed. And then Zach DeGregorio and people like me have found problems with their finances. He was betrayed. There was nowhere to go. The FBI is covering this up. And I told you, I believe Donald Trump is the reason he's forcing Patel and Bagnino to cover it up is because he can't endanger the Middle East peace agreement. Where could Charlie have gone? When you have these forces unfolding against you, you don't even have the witness protection program as an option. There's nowhere he could have gone. And I will reveal this without detail because I promised. And I have to be a person of my integrity and word. I've been told more than once, Charlie verbalized that he knew his life was in grave danger. Other people like me are saying the same thing. I'm hopeful that the people who have told me will one day put their name on it and come out in public, much like Mitch Snow did with Fort Huachuca. I'm hopeful that the people that are telling other people in my position, my colleagues, they'll do the same thing. They'll point fingers and name names. But you know what? I understand why they don't. You could point a finger and say, I heard a direct threat against Charlie. I heard him plotting. You could have that said. And who's going to investigate? Tell me, who's going to investigate? You know, the first time I had this thought about my government, you're going to laugh when I tell you this. I'm watching an episode of 24, and the character Jack Bauer is betrayed by the president, his inner circle, huge corporate influencers, a foreign government. He did hide. He knew how to hide. Eventually, he was pulled out of his hiding, if you remember the series. But there was nowhere for him to run. He just knew how to survive in this digital age. Because what was that show? 2010, thereabouts. And in this digital age, there's nowhere to hide. You know, it's interesting. The Providence mayor even said this in the light of the Brown shootings and the killing of the MIT professor. He said, it's hard to hide in America. My gut aches for Charlie and the anxiety he must have felt leading up to what happened because he knew what was coming. He may not have known all the people behind it, but I think he knew some of it. And I can only imagine having to live with that and feeling betrayed by everybody that you've known. What I wonder here in the lost piece in all this is where are mom and dad and sister? I can think of a few different possibilities on why they're not actively speaking, but the actions spoke volumes. The memorial, the backstage with all the dignitaries, it was Charlie's immediate family. No, they weren't. Were they sitting with Erica Kirk in the front row? Did the dad get offered a chance to speak about what a great son Charlie was? No, that didn't happen, did it? They sat off on the periphery, completely and absolutely ignored. They're not playing ball. I just put myself in my position. If it were my son, what would I do? Easy to say, because I'm not in their position. I'd have to cut my tongue out not to say anything. Something is going on there too. Something deep, dark, and devastating. And maybe they're protecting something else that's just as important as Charlie. And you can read between the lines. But something is keeping that family quiet in the midst of all this horse crap investigation. I've asked the questions that TPUSA should have been asking since day one. When they covered up the crime scene, they should have all appeared on Fox 5 and said, "What is going on here?" I hope to the perceptive person who wrote on my social media comment page, "Where could Charlie have gone?" I hope I answered your question. I'll tell you what this puts me in the mind of. I read a book and saw the movie when I was a child. I was probably 11 or 12 years old. The Diary of Anne Frank. Here, this innocent Jewish girl pursued by horrible Nazis. Oh, I forgot I'm supposed to be anti-Semitic, but let me sympathize with the poor girl. Okay, I'm being sarcastic in case you're wondering. But she had to hide in an attic. And eventually the Nazis discovered her and she didn't live out her life. That's what reminds me a little bit of that story with Charlie. Takes me back to the feelings I had with Anne Frank. Where she, what could she have gone? What could she have done? And I remember asking my parents childlike questions because I was a child. You're thinking, hide under the bed? No, they'd look there. Can't hide in the attic. Where could you go? How terrible. How terrible for Charlie. My heart aches for him and my heart aches for the family. And I'm talking mom, dad, and sister. We're really close people. I told you we'd get to the bottom of this, and I said it wouldn't take 30 years like it did JFK. And we are getting to the bottom of this. And it's not like, hallelujah, I have the truth, throw our arms up in celebration. I'm left with this feeling. How horrible for Charlie Kirk, who did nothing but try to lift the youth up in a positive manner. He did not deserve what happened to him. He does not deserve this horse crap of an investigation and a sham of a trial and a sham of a cover-up. And at the end of the day, except for telling the truth and hope that the Almighty will have justice in this matter, there's nothing we can do except tell the truth. The one thing I will say is that. And I told Jim Mars this, the late Jim Mars. I said, "Jim, we pretty well know what happened now. We know who, what, why, where. We even know money. We know a lot of it." And he goes, "Yeah, it doesn't bring JFK back. And we missed the greatness of what he was trying to do, normalize relations with Cuba, get rid of upper atmospheric testing with nuclear weapons, no Vietnam. I mean, there was so many good things he was doing." But Jim had a really good point. He says, "We give pause to the people that think they can do this again because they almost didn't get away with it." I guess that has to be the solace I have as we finally come to the final lap of investigating the murder of Charlie Kirk. I'm Dave Hodges. This is the Common Sense Show.